65,000 dairy cows being taken annually out of the herd at a cost of €200 million a year. So let's have a look at some of the environmental issues that that move, or that rumoured move, Martin Hayden, we'll come to you in a minute on this, is designed to achieve. We heard from Tim Cullinan at the top, Pat, and you outlined what he meant about the cost of environmental compliance. Let's just hear from Sive O'Neill from Stop Climate Chaos on her thoughts on what needs to be done in the area to make agriculture more sustainable. She spoke to us before the programme and gave us a very brief outline of some of her thinking on it.
The first question we need to ask is what model of agriculture farmers are expected to transition to. Are we talking about more intensification, or are we talking about diversification, reducing our reliance on livestock exports and expanding the horticulture tillage sectors, for example? There's a lack of policy coherence and a lack of commitment to resource the changes that the government is expecting farmers to make. There's a lack of clarity about where exactly investment should go, and there's still huge inequalities in farming incomes across different farming categories. For example, dairy farmers in 2021 earned on average €97,000, whereas cattle rearing farmers earned just about €10,000. There are legacy issues. How do we deal with the question of debt that's been incurred, where farmers were explicitly following government policy to expand their herds and now have to deal with increasing environmental regulations around nitrates and so on? How will we compensate those farmers, and how and when will the government actually put a halt to any further dairy expansion? Agriculture and food production must respect and operate within planetary boundaries. And this means in practice that we need to set limits to nitrogen pollution, greenhouse gases such as methane emissions and carbon dioxide, and also ammonia. These limits are essential to maintain and restore our environment, especially water quality. We need to see a revision of the Food Vision Programme in light of the carbon budgets, and policy interventions that support farmers to achieve those carbon budgets. We need to see more supports for tillage, horticulture, agroforestry, and organic farming. But essentially, we are looking at transitioning away from a livestock model towards a much more mixed approach to agriculture that helps us achieve more self-sufficiency in our food production in Ireland. I want to see that farmers' work is rewarded through fair food prices and public subsidies paid for their environmental services. We are already witnessing a global shift in diets away from meat. So it's important that the Irish agricultural system shifts away from over-dependence on livestock production. But that doesn't mean that there won't be any meat or dairy, just that less is better. It's good for our health, good for our environment, and it should be good for farmers as well.
All right, that was Sive O'Neill from the Stop Climate Chaos Coalition giving us her thoughts on what would need to be done, or in her view, to make agriculture more sustainable in this country. But let's go back to that story on that was on the front of the Irish Independent today, Pat O'Toole. What was the reaction from farmers waking up this morning, do you think, to see this story about 200,000 cows must be culled to hit climate targets? That's at a rate of 65,000 a year at €3,000 a head for cattle. Was there uproar, or was it just confirmation of what they already suspected?
Well, it's yet another story. We have these episodic stories coming along every now and again, you know, with dramatic headlines. Sometimes they're from us, and sometimes they're from other parts of the media. They're part of a bigger picture, and the bigger picture is that there are very challenging asks of the agricultural sector. And there are a variety of opinions.
A reduction of 25% in emissions from agriculture, which makes up 37% of
But that's an intermediate target. I mean, the reality is that we're heading for carbon, and we have signed up an internationally binding commitment, legally enforceable, to carbon neutrality by 2050. And the 2030 targets are really just a step on the road. And they are targets we have to try to hit. I think agriculture has a better chance of hitting its target than practically any of the other sectors.
And why do you say that?
Because we're already in action. The first climate action review presented by Micheál Martin, Leo Varadkar and Eamon Ryan last December was a very public press conference, and I was at that. And following that, there were high-level civil servants from the six departments tasked with achieving the various sectoral targets. And outside of agriculture, we were hearing about interdepartmental working groups and studies and surveys and projections, whereas in agriculture, they were talking about actions, where it's actually happening. Anyone who was in Johnstown Castle last year for Chagosk's open day on sustainability and pathways to sustainability saw in the region of 300 different small-scale measures that farmers can take on their own farms to reduce the carbon output of their farms and also to improve the biodiversity, because it's not just about reducing the carbon footprint. We have to change the relationship of food production with the natural environment. Water quality, air quality, soil quality. So ammonia is a problem, as Sive O'Neill said. And it's the big problem in the Netherlands. Because we are so good at producing meat and milk from grass, because we have an abundance of water most of the time, we're heading into a drought at the moment, the second in 5 years, and it is a product of climate change, and that's part of the evolution of farming. But in general, we have an abundance of resources to allow the kind of food production we've had. The resources which are now limited, and like to what Michael and Martin were saying earlier, and Claire, around the surge in prices of inputs. Like, is this an anomaly or is this a window into the future? I think it's the latter. The reality is that fossil fuel related products such as fertilizer and diesel are going to get more expensive in the medium term.
So this is the much needed wake up call towards
100%
moving away from those expensive inputs. So when you look at that, going back to the story,
yes,
about the reduction in the, yeah, dairy herd in particular.
Okay.
Why the dairy herd in particular,
yes,
first off, and is the dairy sector aware of and largely resigned to this?
Not resigned to it, opposed to it, although there is within the dairy discussion group or the stakeholder group, which has been set up by government, an acknowledgement that there will be a cessation scheme. How much it will be worth has not, like, that's one of the figures which has been speculated by us and others. This was a briefing note, and it was talking about what would be needed to happen for us to hit our carbon target for 2025. I think that realistically, you know, such drastic action to achieve an intermediary target towards the intermediary target that is 2030 might not be the best investment. If we're people like James Moran, who are looking towards 2050, are saying that things that will help us to achieve our short-term targets may actually be counterproductive on the longer journey to sustainability. So we need long-term planning right now.
Martin Hayden, they're pretty stark figures. I mean, I'll go through them again anyway. 65,000, you know, cattle per annum, $3,000 a head, 200 million a year, up to an overall number of 200,000 cows out of the dairy herd to achieve a climate target. You know, that's a document from the Department of Agriculture presented to the lead minister in the department where you are. Have you read it?
It is one of many modelling documents, because we're in a deliberative process at looking at different models. And I'd say we in the Department of Agriculture would be open for greater criticism if we weren't doing such modelling, if there wasn't an analysis. And
I can tell you seen this one? I mean, it's out in the public domain.
There is an awful lot of documents
like
this.
This is one of them, is it? Yeah, okay.
That is one of them. And right, there's an awful lot more like it that look at different elements.
Do you like this one?
No, well, look, just to give you
a few of them, where is this rank in your top 10?
Let me tell you why we did it, and why that's been there is because when we produced Food Vision 2030, we brought together then sectoral groups of all the key stakeholders in the dairy sector, called the Dairy Food Vision Group, the beef sector, beef and sheep group, and we asked them, the key stakeholders, farmer organisations, representatives, industry, co-ops and all the rest, to say, these are the threats and the challenges we face. This is the target we face that we have to meet. It is the right thing for us to do to position the country, to face these.
So did this come from them?
The Dairy Vision Group came up with 19 recommendations, and one of them was
a reduction or
an exit scheme. So of course we're going to model for that. Of course we're going to model to see what would that look like and how would that achieve. It's not a final policy. It's not a policy. It's a deliberative process where we look at that. So let's be very clear. Government has consistently always been very clear. We have never talked about...
Is this
about
like the Commission on Taxation or the Fiscal Advisory Group?
No, because they're outside bodies. They're who make recommendations, and we can consider them too. But government make ultimate decisions. Minister McConnell will make final decisions. Cabinet will make final decisions on these measures. But of course we're going to model and look at every eventuality, what it all looks like. And some of those documents aren't pretty.
So just a bit of crack, is it? Just a few figures on the back of a piece of paper, is it?
But do you think it's unusual that we look at every eventuality?
No, I don't think it's
unusual. Farmers should be reassured that we're looking at this. It's not that it's a bit of crack. We have a group of stakeholders in the dairy sector who came up with 19 recommendations. One of them was, let's look at an exit scheme or a reduction scheme. And we are charged then to go off and see what that looks like. Doesn't mean we've decided to do it. Doesn't mean we have the money to do it or that that's secured because we'd
have to do it. Well, you do have the money to do it. I mean, we know that. You have that and more. Okay,
but the general principle there, like ultimately here, what we're about, the only narrative about culling the herd.
Sure, as you know, you wrote a newspaper article to say there's 1.5 billion to go around for a tax break. You surely have enough to achieve this as well.
If you want to equate the same things, they're about the same thing. They're about options. What we're talking about is giving options to farmers, nothing mandatory. Whatever comes from government will be voluntary. Similarly, we have options ahead of the budget, and I was articulating with my colleagues what I thought some of those options should be about helping the squeeze.
Claire Curran, just what do you think of that? It's just an option. It's just modelling. It'd be wrong for them not to do it.
Well, look, I think it's a pity that they didn't look at the modelling and the options nearly before they set the target or as close to afterwards as possible. I remember when the target was being discussed, we came under actually a lot of pressure for not being able to pick a figure out of the air. The figure ended up being 25%. We have no roadmap. We have no budget. And I think these stories will cause worry and anxiety to farmers who are already concerned about what's to come in relation to climate action and what they're going to be asked to do.
Do you believe in a target for emission reduction?
I absolutely do. And we supported that target, and the target has to be there, but we need to see the roadmap as quickly as possible. Stories like this that will freak farmers out in a lot of cases isn't helpful, but farmers need to know.
But isn't research the best way to write a roadmap? And if they are doing modelling, then the roadmap they'll come up with will at least be based on data.
Absolutely, but could we not have done that before we set the target? Like, this work should have been done, and that's the problem. And we're going to have stories now like this here and there. It's going to be worrying farmers even more. They're already worried enough as it is. We need a roadmap, and we need a specific budget, and it needs to be a separate budget to cap in order to do what we need to do to get farmers on board and to bring them with us. And this isn't going to do that.
All right, Michael Fitzmaurice, you want to come in there?
I think there's one thing that needs to be made very clear, that out there at the moment, and I've a girl in Ireland myself that's interested in farming, and to get confidence back in farming is vastly important. Because at the moment, one week you'll hear Ryan on about a cull. Then you'll hear Malcolm Noonan talking about re-wetting a third of the countryside. Then you'll hear him talking about weeds, even in corridors, like that they're going to do good, and it's not the weed that some people might think. Then you'll hear water buffaloes coming out. And Jesus, like, you can't keep going on with this big headline every week and then 75 or 200,000 of a cull. You cannot keep doing this, because whatever about a good decision or a bad decision, no decision and a wild comment is just leaving the whole sector in stagnation. And there is where we need leadership, and there is where we need, because at the moment, farmers have borrowed heavily. We are trying in the colleges. We have, every one of us, have encouraged young farmers to go at it. And my God, at the moment, how would you stand up in front of a young person, as a politician even, and say, your path is fairly good or your path is clear? We cannot tell them, because we don't know. And that's ferociously important.
Just in relation to that, I think that, that what a lot of farmers might say, because there were calls for a cessation scheme, and I get calls regularly from older farmers who are looking. I mean, once you get into your 60s, every calving season for a dairy or suckler farmer gets harder. There was speculation there would be, and the minister offered a cessation scheme for suckler farmers, and the farm organisations weren't in favour of it. But the demographics are even more challenging for suckler producers. But what farmers would say is that what's much worse than a voluntary cull, where farmers would be paid to get out, is this debt by a thousand cuts. And land use is the big pressure point here. So in terms of the current dairy herd, which has expanded rapidly, there's about 50% increase in cow numbers in the dairy herd in the last 10 years since quotas went. But since the start of the year, each dairy farmer needs in the region of 15 to 20% of extra land to keep the same amount of cows if they're intensively stocked. Because of the change in the nitrate rates and the banding, we're having increasing demands for space for nature. We're having increasing land. Somewhere in the region of 200,000 hectares are going to be required for the biomass plants that Eamon Ryan wants to build for bioenergy. We have to a forest somewhere in the region of 35,000 hectares a year, according to James Moran, to reach carbon neutrality. We're talking about solar farms, and between all of these competing demands.
So where's that land review, land use review at Martin Hay? When are the findings?
What's called the LULUCF Land Use and Land Use Review, or Land Use Forestry. Ultimately here, that's later this year, and that's been worked on at the minute. And most likely at the back end of this year. But the fact here is that we do, what Pat says is absolutely right, we have a lot of competing demands. But my key point here to farmers is, I take on board the point Michael makes about the concern that there is, and I know this all too well.
What's the strategic direction for farmers? There's supposed to be a just transition, and supposed to be a just transition commissioner, and it's supposed to have statutory powers. And, you know, farmers need to know what they're transitioning into, what the strategic direction is, and if they're going to take on expensive debt, like Michael Fitzmaurice mentioned, what are they going to take it on for, and what's in their long-term interests where that investment will be realised?
So I want to speak as well, not just answer that question, but also to the non-farming listener who's listening right now as well, who might think we're talking about starting tomorrow with farmers. Farmers are on a journey of farming more sustainably than they have been in the past. And it's really important that urban-based or non-farming consumers hear that message as well. We are farming completely differently than we were even 10 and definitely 20 years ago. And we'll be farming differently again in the next 5 or 10 years. But what government has set out really clearly is that farmers who make changes to their farming enterprise will do so voluntarily through their choices. The really big point about the 25% target, delighted to hear that Clare and Sinn Féin are supporting that target now, but the really big point...
We supported the legislation.
No, sure, you wouldn't say any target, but anyway, I thought you said there you supported the target.
Well, you can't
now
tell us anything about how we get to the target, so how could we?
So the point is, though, for the farmers to get to those points, the 25% is voluntary. It's not any mandatory measure at farm level. It's a national overall figure, and we'll get there. We know we're 18-20% of the way there already by having better breeding techniques, by growing the grass that uses less artificial fertiliser, by a range of different measures there. And my area of research and innovation in
we're increasing 60%
our investment in research and innovation on the newer technologies that'll get us that last 50% there, you know, like feed additives for our pasture-based system. And if you look at what we invested in the Department of Agriculture and Research and Innovation 7-8 years ago, it was that multi-species forage, that special grass that uses less artificial fertiliser. That's now become widespreadly used.
I just want to hear from Pat McCormick, President of the Irish Creamery Milk Suppliers Association. He gave his reaction to the scheme, the proposed scheme in the modelling of €3,000 to take a cow out of the national herd, which makes up this €200 million cost. Let's hear from him.
Agriculture is unique in that, you know, we have a plan in place to reduce emissions by changing from can to protected urea, by reducing fertilizer and replacing it with clover, concentrating more on methane emissions from a genetic breeding perspective in the years ahead. We need to be in a position maybe to come closest as a sector and to come closest to meeting our target as a sector, the possibility of some farmers entering a scheme voluntarily to reduce or to exit the industry could be a game changer. But, you know, €3,000 a cow, you can jump up and down about that and get excited about it. It may tempt some farmers at a time in life or at a situation in time to opt into that scheme, rather than continuing the investment that has been required to stay compliant with the various onslaught of regulations that have been brought upon farmers. We accept that change can be brought about. Some farmers out there want the right to farm. They want the right to be able to earn a living. It's not about getting money to pull up. You know, we've 17,000 farmers in the dairy industry. We've probably 80-something thousand in the beef industry that want to farm.
Right, that's Pat McCormick there. He's saying, you know, farmers want to stay in it, but Pat O'Toole, they may want to stay in it, and some people may be tempted to get out by this €3,000 a head per cow, although Martin Aidan, you say that that's just a modelling thing. But the average age of a farmer is, what, 57?
57.
So, I mean, where are the younger farmers to drag that average age down? Or is it going to be like Pat McCormick says, people just at the end of their tether take the money to get out of the sector?
Well, we saw Mockra march from a tie where they were founded back in the 1940s to the gates of the Dáil last month, posing this very same question. And they're looking for ways to let them in. They want a retirement scheme for farmers, which we had a successful retirement scheme back in the '90s. And they want the resumption of a scheme like that to allow access. Land mobility is a big issue. About 1% of Irish land is transferred every year, but with the cost of land, the reality is, unless you are coming from a decent base of a farm as a family unit, you can't buy in, or unless you're coming from with significant wealth elsewhere. And we're also seeing land now being treated as an asset. There was a lot of unrest at a huge purchase of land by the National Parks and Wildlife Service in Wicklow, but we're seeing the Save Leitrim campaign, where they say that their survey has shown that a lot of the people who are buying land for afforestation and already afforested land are foreign interests. You have attractive land transfer incentives, taxation incentives to allow family farms to be transferred without having to reduce the asset value. And that is attracting wealth into land ownership. And this is all negative for farmers.
Right. And even the Health and Safety Authority, when they're talking about farm accidents every year, Martin Hayden, it's one of the things they look at is the age of farmers, aging farmers trying to do jobs on their own, dealing with animals, dealing with machinery. It's a young man's game.
Or woman's game, for that matter, either, Colm. Plenty, and we're bringing in initiatives there to grow the amount of female farmers we have in the sector as well, who are in a management position and not just working on the farm, as so many women are across the country. Regularly I'm asked, as Minister with Responsibility for Farm Safety, why do we have so many farmers in their 70s dying on our farms? Because unfortunately, farming is the most dangerous workplace in all.
So how does that issue of succession or transfer, how is that addressed?
My answer back to that question is, it's because we have so many farmers in their 70s actively farming. No other sector has so many people beyond the normal age of retirement still actively farming. Some of them are doing that because they want to, and that's okay, but a lot of them are doing it because they don't have an identified successor. And that's why the likes of schemes, exit schemes or reduction schemes, are important, because there will always be a certain amount of farmers who want to change their farming model, who want to continue farming, but maybe less labour intensively, like dairy in there with sucklers, and there's other land options there. But the trick for us is to make sure that they're incentivized through options. But the way you do it is, like what we've done, the changes we made in terms of long-term leasing, moving away from Conacre, it's young farmers' ability to access land. We have 5 to 6...
How do you deal with that issue? I'll come to you, Michael Fitzmaurice and Claire. How do you deal with the issue that Pat O'Toole was talking about the sheer money that's involved in all of this?
Because we see the extra finances we give to young trained farmers being in partnerships under the TAM scheme. So you can get 40% towards building of shed or improve your infrastructure, you get 60% if you're involved with a young farmer, or right, if you are a young farmer. And those measures incentivise, and I actually think they're better value for money than just a retirement scheme. Retirement schemes are very expensive by their nature.
Right. Claire Curran, what do you make of that?
Yeah, well, look, I think there is a job of work to do in encouraging young farmers. I mean, if some of them were to look at what happened to the forgotten farmers who are still waiting for financial support and have been for more than a decade now at this point, you would be put off. There's a lot of farmers out there. My dad would be one of them in his early 60s, not overly confident in turning around to my two brothers and saying, yeah, you've a viable future here on the land. Both of my brothers are farming. They really enjoy it. It's what they want to do. But it's hard. And I think if we don't get the basics right, and that is a fair price for your produce, if we don't get it right in relation to climate action, then we will be putting farmers off. Lots of people do want to farm, they want to remain in their rural communities, they want a future there, and we have to make sure that that future is viable, and it's government and politicians that have to do that job, and it
so
has
what
to
improvements
be done.
Would you make to the scheme in order to make that? What kind of money are you talking about putting behind those ideas?
Well, the succession scheme that Mockra have put forward, that Taoiseach said last week he is going to review the scheme that they've put forward, and that isn't just looking at retirement, but it's looking at the new entrant or the new son or daughter in some cases coming in. That's really important, because it can't just be about supporting retirement. It has to be the next generation coming in. They did a really good service in relation to land mobility that exists now, that supports farmers as well when it looks at succession and all of that. But we have to encourage the younger farmers. We have to get the forgotten farmers issue dealt with once and for all. That's been going on for far too long. I understand from the Minister it's going to take another number of months. That's an issue as well. But we have to encourage farmers where they want to move on, and also the next generation onto the land. That's
right,
really
Michael
important.
Fitzmaurice, you talked about the next generation within your own family, whether you could encourage them into the agricultural sector. What would you do?
Well, first of all, there's always a struggle on the land, because it's the love of the land and people have given their lives to it, and it's the last thing a lot of people want to let go. And they're always concerned about the next generation as well. What will happen if the young fella or the girl gets married, or what might happen down the road? That's the reality. And secondly, and this comes from a farming family, that you'll hear it with people for years saying, I sure look at get a job, this is a tough life, get a job, educate yourself,
and get
a job. And if you keep telling someone something, they'll do that. That's the problem. But what we need to do is, we need to make sure that we bring in a retirement scheme, and in fairness to the government, like, and I will say this, and I have to be man enough to say it. Over the last number of years, with the young farmer schemes, with the different things they can get, there is an awful lot more there than when I went farming years ago, you know, and I have to give credit for that. But what we need to do is make sure that we give them a clear pathway going forward. And that's so important.
What are you talking about there? Where?
Well, in the line of climate, at the moment, as Pat said, you have the land use thing coming on. No one knows what's going to happen. It's going to be the back end of the year. You have the banding that has put pressure on more land. You have the derogation at the moment. We don't know, is it going to be 220, 250? What will it be? You have... say, and I think one thing that needs to be out there to the public, you know, you'll hear these environmentalists.
Has it not been reduced to 220? Is that not?
We don't know yet.
It depends on the catchment area, but ultimately here, the steps and the measures the government have brought in has been because we identified the importance of the derogation to the 7,000 farmers.
But
that
I think
are
one
in
thing
that
the public needs to know as well, that every farmer this year in their new BPS application form had to have 10% of their ground space for nature. We have also a new report out, which I've been talking about for years, where we said we had a cover of trees in 11%. That's gone now to 18.5%.
Right.
And sadly, there's one last point.
There's one last point. You'll have to hold that till the next time you're on, because we have to take a break. We'll be back after this.
The Late Debate with Cullum O'Mungon on RTE Radio 1.